You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee radio broadcast. The host and executive producer is Dr. Janine James. All of their programs are archived, so go to www.timeforanawakening.com and place in the search portal, Elders. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, East 12. Call our office for an appointment.
We're poor, Ashe. We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe.
We poor to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren and their children's children, those who raised the great early civilization. civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open-air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this faith and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of life.
Taking advances, huh? Me and my niggas taking real chances, Y'all on the gram holding money to your ear. There's a disconnect. We don't call that money over here, yeah.
Light nigga, dark nigga, faux nigga, real nigga. Rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga. Still nigga. Still nigga. Light nigga, dark nigga, faux nigga, real nigga. Rich nigga, pro nigga, house nigga, feel nigga. Still nigga. Still nigga.
My name is
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee radio broadcast. The host and executive producer is Dr. Janine James. All of their programs are archived, so go to www.timeforanawakening.com and place in the search portal, Elders. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Well, welcome. This is Dr. Janine James, and we are here, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. And we are delighted to be here because there's a lot going on right now. Everywhere we look, we're talking about Roe v. Wade. And the question that the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee has asked, why should you care? So we're here today, the Sankofa Council, and we are looking forward to this time with you because I think you're going to really, really get into this topic. I'd like to welcome Mother Asarta. If you would provide for us the purpose of the Sankofa Council.
Yes, good evening, Dr. James. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is an ever-evolving community dedicated to cultivating Sankofa. That's the reclaiming of our African memory, our African governance, and our African spirituality. To provide a healing, empowering environment for people of African descent globally. Through an immersion exploration of study and practice, we exemplify the principles of Nguzo Saba, which provide moral and unifying values as the foundation for constant movement towards restoring our people to our traditional greatness. We study and exemplify the ancient laws of Ma'at that allowed our ancestors to flourish and survive and to pass on a legacy of greatness and to interact harmoniously with the world by honoring the universal consciousness in all of creation. We contribute the skill sets that we've acquired as we seek ways to share with our descendants the principles that have historically been our strength and that have sustained us through captivity, colonization, and acculturation. We're dedicated and committed for as long as it takes to fulfill this purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Mother Sartre. And you have also for us a profile, an ancestral profile. And who's that going to be today?
Yes, our ancestor profile this evening is Constance Baker Motley. Constance Baker was born on September 14th in 1921 in New Haven, Connecticut, the ninth of 12 children. Her parents, Rachel Huggins and McCall Alva Baker, were immigrants from the Caribbean island Nevis. After they migrated, her mother served as a domestic worker, and her father worked as a chef for different Yale University student societies, including the secret society Skull and Bones. Her mother, Rachel Baker, served as a community activist. She founded the New Haven NAACP. At 15, Motley read about works by James Weldon Johnson and W.E. Du Bois, which inspired her to interest in Black history. She met a minister who taught classes in Black history that focused her attention on civil rights and the underrepresentation of Black lawyers. While in high school, Motley became the president of the New Haven Negro Youth Council and was secretary of the New Haven Adult Community Council. In 1939, she graduated with honors from Hill House High School. Though she had already formed a desire to practice law, Motley lacked the means to attend college and instead went to work for the National Youth Administration. She continued her involvement in community activities. Through this work, she encountered a local businessman and philanthropist, Clarence W. Blakeslee, who, after hearing Motley speak at a New Haven community center, offered to pay for her education. With his financial help, she started college at Fisk University, a historically Black college in Nashville, Tennessee. But after 1 year, she transferred to New York University, where she graduated with a Bachelor's of Arts degree in economics in 1943. She received her Bachelor of Law in 1946 from Columbia Law School. In October 1945, during her second year at Columbia Law School, future United States Supreme Court Associate Justice Thurgood Marshall hired her as a law clerk. Motley was widely acknowledged as a major figure in the civil rights movement, especially its legal battles. After graduating from Columbia Law School in 1946, she was hired by the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, the LDF, as a civil rights lawyer. As the fund's first female attorney, she became associate counsel to the LDF, making her a lead trial attorney in a number of early and important civil rights cases, including representing Martin Luther King Jr., the Freedom Riders, and the Birmingham Children Marchers. She visited Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. while he sat in jail, as well as spent a night with civil rights activist Medgar Evers under armed guard. In 1950, she wrote the original complaint in the case of Brown versus Education, the first African-American woman ever to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court in the Meredith versus Fair. She won James Meredith's effort to be the first Black student to attend the University of Mississippi in 1962. Motley was successful in 9 of the 10 cases she argued before the Supreme Court. She was a key legal strategist in the civil rights movement, helping to desegregate Southern schools, buses, and lunch counters. Beyond her work with the LDF, Motley continued her civil rights work. As an elected official in 1964, she was elected to the New York State Senate and devoted much of her time to advocate for the housing equality for a majority Black and Latin low-income tenants. She also endorsed urban renewal projects and looked to improve the neighborhoods in New York City that needed aid. Motley was elected on February 4th, 1964, to the New York State Senate, 21st District. She was the first African-American woman to sit in the state Senate. She took her seat in the 174th New York State Legislature, was re-elected in November 1964 to the 175th New York State Legislature, and resigned her seat when she was chosen as the first woman as Manhattan Borough President on February 23rd in 1965. After her predecessor was elected to a state judicial position in November 1965, she was elected to a full 4-year term. Motley was nominated by President Lyndon B. Johnson on January the 26, 1966, to a seat on the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. Senator Jane Eastland of Mississippi delayed her confirmation process for 7 months. Eastland was in opposition of her past desegregation work, including Brown versus the Board of Education and the Meredith versus Fair. He used his influence as a chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee to disrupt Motley's nomination and went as far as accusing her of being a member of the Communist Party. Despite opposition, she was confirmed by the United States Senate on August 30, 1966, and received her commission the same day, becoming the first African-American female federal judge. She served as chief judge from 1982 to 1986. She assumed senior status on September 30, 1986. Her service terminated on September 28, 2005. Motley received many honors and awards. A Candace Award for Distinguished Service for the National Coalition of 100 Black Women in 1984. In 1993, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. In 2001, President Bill Clinton awarded her the Presidential Citizens Medal. The NAACP awarded her the Spingarn Medal, the organization's highest honor, in 2003. Constance Baker married Joel Motley Jr., a real estate and insurance broker, in 1946. They were married for 59 years until her death of congestive heart failure on September 28, 2005, 14 days after her 84th birthday at the NYU Downtown Hospital in New York City. She left one son, Joel Winston Motley III, co-chairman of the Human Rights Watch, and three grandchildren. During the early 21st century, Motley became a part of the Just the Beginning Foundation, a foundation dedicated to preserving African-American judges who improved the African-American community through their work. Constance Baker Motley. Wow, what an awesome African-American woman. Well done. May she rest in peace. Ashe?
Ashe.
Ashe. That is awesome. That is awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Mama Asarta, for that beautiful presentation of our ancestor. And we would like at this time our dear sister Afua Mayat and her sharing with us one of the principles of Nguzu Saba. Sister Afua.
Good evening, Hotep, elders, and community family. The Ugu Saba chosen for this discussion is Ujima, which was created under the visionary of Dr. Karimba. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. To build and maintain our community together and to make our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and to solve them together. The third principle of Ujima, which is a commitment to active and informed togetherness on matters of common interest. It is also recognition and respect of the fact that without collective work and struggle, progress is impossible and liberation unthinkable. Moreover, the principle of Ujima supports the fundamental assumption that Africans is not just an identity, but also a destiny and duty, a responsibility, in other words, our collective identity in the long run is a collective future. Thus, there is a need and obligation for us as self-conscious and committed people to shape our future with our own minds and hands and shape its hardships and benefits together. Ujima, as principle and practice, also means that we accept the fact that we are collectively responsible for our failures and setbacks, as well as our victories and achievements. And this holds true not only on the national level, but also on the level of family and organization or smaller units. Such a commitment impels and encourages a victorious capacity for self-criticism and self-correction, which is indispensable to our strength, defense, and development as a people. Ashe?
Ashe.
Ashe.
Well, we are so pleased to have this discussion, and it is one that the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee have discussed at great length. And we felt that this was an important topic for us to not only discuss, but also to think about it in the context of Nguzu Saba, to think about it from its Afrocentric connections, and how would that society view this topic. And so I am delighted for us, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, our guests, Dr. Patricia McManus, who I will introduce shortly, and you, our listeners, in a conversation about why you should care, why should we care about what's going on, this conversation. And not unlike many of you, Sankofa Council has been discussing the overturn of Roe v. Wade, which serves to remove the ability to obtain an abortion in the United States. At least it will be left up to the states individually what their rules will be regarding this issue. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee has discussed this subject, and based on our purpose to support the principles of Nguzu Saba and consider historic Afrocentric teaching, will present that position. It is not our intention to support the denial of the autonomy of a woman to make decisions about her reproductive health and childbearing. But as a principle of Ujima, we wish to help all to understand some relevant facts. It is the role of all of us to seek to create the next generation of human beings. The next generation of human beings. Pregnancy is that process that allows the conception, carrying of the pregnancy, childbirth, and parenting. Females are required to be pregnant. We have been anatomically and hormonally designed for that purpose, to allow for the development of a child to be born. We have not been able to replace the role of a female being able to achieve that feat. We have been able to support at earlier and earlier times developing babies outside of the mother. Presently, babies born at as early as 22 weeks, 5 months of time inside the mother, to be aided in their survival outside of the mother. About 20% of such babies born that early do survive despite the early time they are born. African civilizations recognize the role and rites of passage that were created. The youth were required to participate, to teach male and female youth about the importance of creating new human beings and their respective roles. Males understood from that teaching what they were needed to do to support the mothers, to allow her to be able to safely continue her pregnancy, to allow for the development and birth of a new human being. They knew mother was needed and that she needed certain food, protection, as she would be less able to do this for herself. They hunted, they grew crops, fished, and brought it back to the females. Unlike birds and some other species, the males, not the mother, built the structures needed for her protection during her time of pregnancy to allow the baby to develop. Over time, many women have not been valued or protected as she engaged in this role. The African society understood and supported their women. However, women have attempted to perform that role without the support of the father, her family, and the community. There are no measures that ensure the women who are pregnant will have the necessary resources, funds, available to care for herself, her family, her baby. She may not be able to obtain employment or may not be physically able to work a job. She may not be able to continue her education, lose promotions, or not be allowed to graduate. And for the baby who is not normal or is the result of rape, there may be persons who are willing to care for and love those children. Those women should be supported to continue the pregnancy and allow the willing families to assume responsibility for parenting of such children. We should not feel as there is no other option but to end the lives of those babies through abortion, but we cannot have part of the story by attempting to make a female continue a pregnancy by forcing her to remain pregnant. We should be able to help her to want to continue the pregnancy and provide for her what she needs and ensure that she can survive this pregnancy so that she can care for her family. I have not understood why this right has not been ensured. Just as we can, with the strike of a pen, legislate no abortions, we should be able to mandate that men take care of the women and the babies they fathered. There should be a fund if the father is not able or willing to do so. The society should know that the father is not fulfilling that role, and men and their families should be willing to participate in the needs of the mother and the baby, and her family, or the community should take on a role to do so. Men should know that the mothers of their children are provided the truly quality health care for her to survive, to be able to mother her children. We can give billions of dollars to support other nations in their wars. We can fund prisons and many other financial investments but not to invest in our future generations. But we question why there is the crime and the violence and senseless killing. This is not a problem that impacts only one group of people, and I have taken care of them all over the last 42 years as a physician, an obstetrician, gynecologist, and a maternal fetal medicine specialist. So what are your ideas on how we begin the process of teaching through rites of passage our future parents to support our pregnant females and parents? I say this as we lead into our introduction of our guests, and we are so delighted to have with us here today Dr. Patricia Taylor McManus, who is co-founder and president, CEO of the Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin Incorporated. The Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin is a community-based health advocacy organization whose primary roles are advocacy, health education, research, and policy. Dr. McManus has a diploma, BSN, and a Master's of Science in Nursing. Her strong commitment to health advocacy and the improvement of urban health led her to obtain a doctorate in urban studies with a special emphasis on health and human systems in 1993. She has counseled both locally and nationally on health issues related to cultural competence and system changes. For the past 20 years, Dr. McManus has focused on issues related to health equity and equality related to African American and other underserved populations. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is delighted to have with us today our own Patricia Taylor McManus. Dr. McManus, welcome.
Why, thank you. My goodness. You know, I don't like to sit and listen to that all the time, but it sounds good anyway. I don't know if I do everything. I certainly stay in trouble. That keeps, because if I do all the stuff you just talked about, which I do, it's going to stir some feathers, you know. But I think one thing about it is that we have to do that. We have to, looking at the things we're talking about, certainly even this latest thing in terms about the ban, is that we have to advocate for our communities. It's good to go and sit in meetings and talk about what happens, but then has to move to the next step of us doing something about it. And we try, certainly with the Black Health Coalition, it affects our funding, obviously. Certain funding we should have gotten, we don't get. But it doesn't, the certain funding we don't take well, because if we do it, it slows us down for the things we need to do. That becomes problematic. For sure. The issue of certainly around abortions and what it means to us as a community, especially in being in a country like the United States, it boggles a lot in terms of when I just talk to individual people, especially since this even happened, what people think. It unfortunately, it's melded so much into our day-to-day operations, at least in Milwaukee, you know, I could certainly speak to that, difficult to, because we're going to have to revamp even the thought of thinking about abortion, because so many people look at abortion as the only option they have when something have to automatically feel that's what they should do. So, I mean, even getting communities like Milwaukee, I mean, one of the most segregated communities in the country, but we are surrounded by so many people who don't think that people of color African people have anything to offer to what happens. It becomes a fight, and those resources you need to do something is tied to that as well. So I was looking at that. I pulled out actually a document that I helped put together 10 years ago. We did get some funding to do that, and it was tied to, oddly enough, increasing birth rates, not increasing birth rates in terms of just getting more babies, but increasing those that do come, that they survive. And so I pulled that out to look at just, I'm going to pull a little bit from there, because it does, what we did as the Black Health Coalition, we invited other entities to be a part of what we do, but we made it real clear who was running it, and that was us. And it was interesting watching people, especially some of the white folks in Milwaukee who are so used to being asked to get help from them, and then they take control of everything. It was a different adjustment they had to make, and some of them didn't want to stay with what we were doing, but that was okay, because I think it made, and I'm looking at this now, like I said, it's 10 years old, it's 100-page, 150-page, I think, document, almost 200-page document, so trust me, I'm not going to talk about that. I pulled out some things that talk about what are the things we need to look at in terms of, it's not going to be just a matter of going to people and saying what we do now, you know, we do say that, but then what does it mean in terms of how we wrap around the populations we have and how they tie that into what's going on in a city, especially like Milwaukee. The pandemic certainly over the last 2 years has made a major adjustment to what people do. Folks who have a lot of, already have a lot of issues related to access to resources that can have their families. The pandemic has sorely affected people in Milwaukee, and especially people of childbearing age. And certainly we're talking about people, women of childbearing age now, what that means. And just individually talking to them, and if we look at like my age, other ages, you know, again, the young women now, how can I say it, is that abortion is a part of who they think is, what they think is natural. That's probably one of the best ways I can say in some of the conversations we have, that they just see it as a natural end and they don't really know what the problem is. So one of the things I think really needs to happen is us getting more, putting together something from an educational form, educational format, talks about what this is and what it means in terms of the viability of the community, and the viability is certainly of African Americans in the community, and Africans in the community, that is culturally appropriate. That becomes a question of, is abortion always been a part of what's considered culturally appropriate in, you know, for American people or for Black people? And when I talk to folks in Milwaukee again, you know, they're ready to fight to make sure that they get that back, that piece back, which they wouldn't have done for other things. And I think that's why I guess I'm raising this issue of how do we to understand what this means, because they see it as a privilege that has now been taken from them rather than a slowing up process of a baby's actually dying, you know, based on what this is and how people feel. And there's still there's the back and forth around the issue of abortion and what that means, and especially if they're based on, you know, rape and other types of things that they have no control over. How do we as a community get them to understand that a lot of the things that happen has to do with the conditions that we have? In a city like Milwaukee, for the last 3 or 4 years, we've had different foundations who really define Milwaukee as the worst place to raise a child, and a lot of that has to do with the inequities that are within the system. And how do we deal with this? And how do we get people to, especially our younger people, because there are so many folks now. I think I was talking to somebody earlier about, you know, you can have they could have 6 abortions. It's one young lady who I knew when she was waiting to go get her next one. It's become such a way of life within our communities that we really are going to have to ingrain some of the things as to having them understand why they need to look at this in a way. There are enough babies who are fighting to live and they die. And so what does that mean when we approve a baby not, you know, baby's not making it, who just couldn't make it, or that we're just taking babies? How do you talk about that? And I think you guys, and certainly Dr. James knows more about this than I do, because what we do is community-driven. We want people to think about it. This is not a in this document that we put together, we certainly talked about it, but the whole point was trying to improve infant mortality. And unfortunately, after we wrote this document, if we couldn't find funding to continue it, but it did talk about some things that, you know, having a community plan, pulling our community together, not just having all the, you know, the folks who feel they're the ones that are most educated. Because one thing about education, depending on where we get education, and that's why it's certainly good to have Sankofa, when you have education, they can look at things differently and still feel they're being supported. Because that's what I've heard when we work with teenagers I worked with teenagers quite a while as well. And they had this sense of what you mean when you say culturally appropriate or community driven, but they never saw it in Milwaukee. There's been very few projects that really have that then for them to look at. Or family centers. What do they see as a family? Because we tried to give them some ideas or principles of what we should have, that we should recognize the unique role of African American organizations. Because again, a lot of our folks say, well, the white organizations, the black organizations, you know, what's the difference? Big difference. Address racism. And these are the things that I'm quoting for having principles in which we should look at. Integrate the concept of life course. And I don't know if people are used to life course. It was really big about 10 years ago. The life course really is a way of how you deal with the community. We use that life course theory that basically says that it's looking at factors that have always proposed to explain, it kind of explains disparities such as differential access to prenatal care, socioeconomic differences, and none seem to be to explain it all as it's in there, but getting people to understand why things happen within our community, many times within our own health institutions, and even on our health education, that's not explained at all, especially not from an Afrocentric way of understanding for African people to understand. It's still very much the assumption is that who we are and what we do does not make a difference. So this issue now coming up is just really kind of bogged my mind in terms of how do we get our communities to understand the fact that they could do things differently that wouldn't even move to them having to have an abortion. You know, right now abortion is seen like it's natural. What's all the fuss about? I'm talking to some folks and they're kind of like, well, you just don't do it if you don't want to. I mean, it's not seen as, for all intents and purposes, you know, taking a life. They don't see it as that. So for some, if the baby's going to die differently, that's different. So I just think that there needs to be, and I don't know how we do it, but there needs to be a lot of conversations, especially around the younger groups of people that we have now. But we can't leave the older folks out like me, because we could be the worst barrier to getting them to listen in terms of filling out a way that fits African-centric type of understanding that usually works well with folks. We just can't get living in a country like this that we live in. Everybody I know on this call knows what you have to fight, and many times we end up fighting our own people. So I guess I'm going to stop, but I'm going to say that I think I find that just as this has been going on now, that I think the most I've seen who's going to be most resistant is our own people. And what do we do about that? So I'll stop there. If there's some questions or responses to what I said or adding to it, please do.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. McManus. And we're going to allow for a sponsor announcement from Mama Sarta, and then we're going to the top of the hour, and we'll come back after for further discussion.
Our sponsor, EDOC Advice, is a website created to provide a place to get answers to your health and medical concerns. Are you wanting more options than you feel you're getting? Let them help you problem solve. Go to their website and ask your questions. Their experienced professionals will help you to obtain the help you need that makes sense to you. www.edocadvice.com.
Thank you so much, Sister Mother Sarta. And I see that we have Dr. Alicia Jackson. Is she here on the call with us?
Yes, Dr. James, I'm here.
Welcome. So good to see you. Another obstetrician, gynecologist. You have some thoughts you want to share with us?
Yes, I've been enjoying the talk, and I really enjoyed your opening introduction and monologue, just really tying into the different sides and expectations that we need to consider beyond this precedent being shut down by the Supreme Court. I've always, it always brings me back to the choice study that was done in St. Louis many years ago, really looking at abortion and contraception following abortion. And I think that we have continued over the years to always miss that point of prevention and really trying to put funds and attention at that angle. It's been just really the talk of abortion, who gets it, who needs it, how do we get to the point where we're preventing it, and also, as you spoke of, how are we getting to the point where we're making everyone responsible for after the babies are born. And I just think we have to challenge our states to really have a broader conversation that goes far beyond shutting down our now ending this precedence of the whole state.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jackson. Now, you're coming to us from Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Houston, Texas. Now, there's a lot of conversation coming
Absolutely.
Out of Texas.
It's definitely a scary place for a black woman to be. We know that there's a known statistic that this is the most dangerous place, the state of Texas, to deliver a baby. As a black woman, we have one of the highest, or no, sorry, the highest maternal mortality rates in the United States, as well as infant mortality rates.
That's pretty scary at a time when we're talking about the fact that abortions will not be available.
Correct.
And we already suffer from high mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So we can expect that this problem is going to be worse.
Absolutely.
And I've been dismayed that we have not adequately addressed this as a health issue, as a national issue. And I think that we're having this discussion to know that these are the areas that we need to be prepared to attack and come up with strategies that will make a difference so that we are not dying. That is the key issue here. But we are at the top of the hour. We thank you, and we will be back momentarily.
People live. You need to realize that there are more children attending segregated schools in the United States today than there were previous to Brown versus Board of Education, and that's a fact. You need to realize that it is not the intent of white people to let this situation change in favor of anyone but themselves. And right now, white people are really frightened. If you don't understand the destruction of Planned Parenthood offices, and you don't understand the wall that we're going to build on the southern border of the United States, you haven't read the book The Birth Dearth by Ben Wattenberg. Ben Wattenberg was a brilliant Jewish man who was a member of the American Enterprise Institute, and he wrote a book, the first paragraph of which says, "The main problem confronting the United States today is there aren't enough white babies being born in this country." He was an advisor to presidents of the United States. He wrote the book in 1987. He says there are, if we don't change this and change it rapidly, white people will lose their numerical majority in this country, and this will no longer be a white man's land. Now, I'm not misrepresenting this. I'm telling you exactly, almost exactly what he says. He says there are three things we can do to solve this. Number one, we could pay women to have babies, as they have been doing in Western European nations for years. Then he says, and these are his words, not mine, "Unfortunately, we would have to pay women of all colors to have babies, so we don't want to do that." He says the second thing we could do is increase the number of legal immigrants that are allowed into this country every year. Then once again, he says, "Unfortunately, the vast majority of those wanting to come to this country today are people of color, so we don't want to do that." The third thing he says, and white men, women had better pay attention to this, 60% of the fetuses that are aborted every year are white. If we could keep that 60% alive, that would solve our birth dearth. Does that sound like racism to you? And if it doesn't, I want to know why it doesn't. If it doesn't, you don't understand what racism is. And I think it does. When we close Planned Parenthood clinics because we think they're there only for abortion, we need to take another look. They are used for many, many, many things, and many women need the things that they can get from Planned Parenthood clinics. But we are willing to do away with all that good to avoid allowing white women to have control of their own bodies. Now, nobody had better tell one of my daughters or granddaughters what they can do with their body. You haven't that right. Now, it would be interesting if we were as concerned about sperm cells, wouldn't it? I mean, we could take a whole lot of fun out of you boys' lives.
Right. A lot of people don't understand the trauma associated with race and racism. Can you talk a little bit about the trauma associated with
it? The trauma associated with it?
Yeah.
One of the main traumas is it tells white people that they are superior because of the lack of melanin in their skin. And then they find out suddenly that we've got a black president. That's traumatic. That's where their trauma is. Living a lie, finding out the truth, is traumatic. Finding out now, recently, that within 30 years, white people will be in the numerical minority in this country is going to be traumatic. And that's the reason we have to solve this problem, and we have to solve it now. I will ask folks tonight, how many of you black folks want to get even with all white people? And that's what white people are quite certain blacks are going to want to do, is get even with all white people. And nobody will raise their hand. And then I'll say, how many of you want to get even with one or two? Every hand will go up, and you know why, and so do I. White people are scared to death right now, particularly white males. They're scared to death that they are going to lose their power in the future. And they are. But if you want to get ready for the future, if you want to be treated well in the future, treat others well in the present. What we do in the
past... I'm skin girl. Your skin just like hers. The best thing in the world. No change for anybody else in your brown skin girl. Your skin just like hers. The best thing in the world.
I never charge you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up poor like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dreamed forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She wanna be a pretty but your heart is a mess. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. Line to buy mine and I grind, yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love, depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down, can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love, she fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world, I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, that skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world, I never
trade you for anybody else.
Boys like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Drip broke 11 when my Kelly's rolling.
I think tonight she might break her brain. Melanin too dark to throw her shade.
She minds her business and winds her ways.
More like 24K.
Okay.
Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, got skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world. I never trade you for anybody else.
Oh, have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me.
Because
there's complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamonds. Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth. I love everything about you, from your nappy curls to every single curve, your body natural.
Same skin that was broken, me the same skin taking over. Most things are to focus you, but when you're in the room, they notice you.
Cause you're beautiful. Yeah, you're beautiful.
With you in all of your glory. Your skin is not only dark, it shines and it tells your story. Keep dancing, they can't control you. They watch and they all adore you. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told you. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee radio broadcast. The host and executive producer is Dr. Janine James. All of their programs are archived, so go to www.timeforanawakening.com and place in the search portal, Elders. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
We are happy to be back with you again, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. This is Dr. Janine James, and I'm here with our other hosts, Mama Sarta Ankti and Sister Afua Mayat. And we are so pleased to have with us our own Dr. Patricia McManus of the Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin, and we are discussing Roe versus Wade. And we want to ask the question, why should you care? Why should we care? And Dr. McManus has presented to us some very fascinating information. And we propose from an Afrocentric perspective, what is it that we can begin to do? What are the strategies, particularly from one who's been involved in policy making, that you feel may serve from the standpoint of re-educating our nation about the value, the importance of making the next generation? What is it that needs to be done so that we are not finding ourselves in a position that makes us want to kill our future? How do we support well those families? And I'm coming from a perspective that most of our listeners, most in the audience, most of the legislators, I am an obstetrician gynecologist. I've been doing it for 42 years, and I've seen loads of women who are so challenged over this issue. There is no woman who takes this decision lightly. It's not a pleasant experience by any means, mentally or physically. But how can we begin to change our attitude? One, so that if we do not want to be parents, that we do the necessary measures to prevent becoming pregnant in the first place, the place for contraception. But if we are not going to use contraception, then we are preparing for parenting. And abortion, while it is a solution to that immediate issue, does not address what we have been designed to do, and that is create the next generation. But how do we support people? And we have yet to do that. We have yet to stand forward and say, we are here financially, emotionally, that we are not putting people down, that we are celebrating their pregnancies. How do we begin this type of process? Dr. McManus, I'm putting this on your shoulder to get us started in that direction.
Before Dr. McManus starts, if I may jump in, we also we're opening the invitation for callers. Our number is area code 215-490-9832. And that's again area code 215-490-9832. So I will pass it back to you, Dr. McManus. So while we wait on Dr. McManus, would also like to invite, if you would like to learn more about the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee and the elders, learn why we sponsor this program, understand our purpose and mission, you're welcome to participate. Please send us an email to sankofamke@gmail.com. with your contact information and interest. And we would love to hear from you.
If Dr. McManus is muted, we're going to ask you.
I'm back on, but if I can wait, if you have something else.
One of the things I think that we as a group here need to be able to come to some, because we're all going to be different in terms of what needs to be done and how much needs to be done and where it needs to be done, is that a way of beginning, you know, I would see it as a way of us beginning a conversation ourselves to see where the areas that we think are so important, and then also looking at the areas that we agree or disagree on, and that we agree to agree and disagree on. I would like to see that happen. I mean, you can't do that all tonight, but I would suggest that's how it would help, especially with, you know, what we have, folks that we have in this talking about this, and then there, is that it'd be good if we all had some idea. And I'm assuming that's part of what you wanted to pull from this, was to at least maybe get the groundwork on where we are, what we think ought to happen, because it's going to be much harder if we come from a whole 6 or 7, 8 different arenas and try to go to the same thing. Now, if we all want to go back to our where we are, like I was talking about Milwaukee, because I've born here, been here all my life, so that's what I talk about, but maybe part of it would be too, what you would bring back to the group would be going back and finding out from other people what they think. It's been a little bit surprising to me, just me asking some questions. It's dug in a lot stronger than I anticipated. I'm just wondering if people would assume that from where they live and work as well.
Sankofa Council, what are your thoughts? I know you had a lot to say in our general meeting, but Mother Sarta, I'm calling on you.
Just listening to the what was been said so far, one thing that is interesting to me is looking at it politically. First of all, the decision that was made by conservative justices. And did the court make their decision based on the majority of the opinion of the population on abortion? Or was the decision on abortion based on personal beliefs of the justices?
It was personal beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So that gives us
right.
Personal beliefs. So that gets us back to politically thinking, you know, what group are you with? And also, politically thinking, the abortion clinics are closing. Why? If abortions is not all of the business that the clinics offer, why wouldn't they be the main focus for corrections? Since most people are using those facilities anyway, the ways of getting the majority of connection would be through those facilities. So is it the money that supports those facilities that they're going after? Politically, it's always the money. We got to follow the money. And then when we talk about contraception, we're talking about women's contraception. I haven't heard anybody say anything about men participating in that contraception.
Right.
And childbirth. So the choices are between the men and the males and the females, because now it's going back to those that are procreating, their responsibility, and what are they willing to do in such a situation as this?
Unfortunately, we don't have a form of male contraception beyond a vasectomy, which is, you know, irreversible. And so we likely need to be more science to that, but I think we're focused on women's contraception because we have the power to control our bodies and we control reproduction, and as Dr. James spoke of at the beginning. And so it's really, a lot of that has to be on us to set that precedent, or we're going to make sure that we have children when we're ready and know what's available to you.
Another thing,
I like what was said in the beginning when you know, that responsibility. Children are precious. And I like the responsibility, again, going back to the male and female as far as that's concerned. I mean, part of our conception, our contraception also has been to get our tubes tied. That's permanent as well. So if it's permanent for him, for me, how come it can't be permanent for him? They're missing from the conversation. And they're key.
My perspective is more from the legality standpoint of my concerns, of what's going to happen from women who are still seeking abortions and the criminalization of women. As I was researching some of this, it was interesting. I came across a case that happened, and this was in 2017, a young lady by the name of Latrice Fisher in Michigan. She was carrying her fourth child, and she had a home birth. And the baby, during the birth, the child did not, and they're identifying it also as a fetus, did not survive. And she was charged. They had taken her into custody. They seized her phone and started checking her phone to see if she had researched anything regarding abortions. They came across her searching for the Plan B pill, and so she was indicted. So those concerns I have, she was looking at, if I'm not mistaken, it was a 20 to 30, possibly to life. She was facing 20 to 40 years or life in prison if she was found guilty. And I would say she was fortunate to have an attorney who represented her, and they fought the case. But these are things that we as Black women, think there, those issues are going to, we'll be the ones in court. The recording that was played during the top of the hour was Dr. Jane Elliott, who shared from a European perspective of why the Roe v. Wade was overturned in the interest of producing the white population. And I feel, and my concern is that we are going to get caught, midwives, abdullahs, if a child, a newborn, does not live, what will be the consequences and the legalities for those professional healthcare professionals if something should happen?
It would seem. Does anybody know what the numbers are for? A friend of mine actually works in that. I could ask her. But from what you're saying, what is the current? Does anybody know the current status in terms of the, what are the statistics for doulas, midwives, that kind of thing? Does anybody know that's on? I could check with a friend of mine, but it just popped in my head as I was listening to you. Because my other question is, even right now, with abortion being legal, how, if at all, do those fit into if mortality data?
And that's the thing, you know, how are they going to actually start tracking and playing these things? To me, right. It's a big concern, and we're caught in the net. There may be other avenues for more, I would say, of white women And there may be those of low income that may get caught in the net with us. But I see if you're already being charged and they're trying to convict you on a sentence, you're talking about life in prison for the fact that you, I don't want to call it a miscarriage, but during the delivery at a home birth, the child did not make it, and then you are now being charged for this?
This was a full-term delivery. Can you give us a little more information? This is not a miscarriage. This is a full-term delivery where the baby
She, according to, I'll let you guys talk. I'm going to pull it up because they said it was how many weeks, and it was greater, according to the autopsy, greater than 35 weeks.
What state is this? What state is this that this occurred? Did you say that before?
In Mississippi. Mississippi.
Oh.
Yes.
Mississippi.
Well, the people who are under attack, and the way most of this has been written, has really been the providers, the doctors, who actually perform the procedure, not the person who is seeking the procedure to be done. And so you have many of the physicians who will be afraid to do so because of the limitations and sanctions that can be placed on them, and that includes incarceration. So it's really a means of intimidation,
right,
for those who can perform the procedure. But let me just remind you about why Roe v. Wade was took steam. And it related more so to the fact that women were going through with abortions through whatever means possible. And they followed some pretty extreme measures when they decided they wanted to no longer be pregnant. And as a result, there were many women who lost their lives in the process of attempting to end a pregnancy. They were going to people who were not trained, and so they did things. You've heard about people using coat hangers, and you gotta wonder, well, where are they putting this coat hanger? But it resulted in bleeding and infection and deaths. And there was not a family who was not affected by someone attempting to end a, so to speak, unwanted pregnancy.
Right.
And that's a concern that we'd have to have. Again, if you don't have a means of seeking the care of someone who is trained to take care of you properly, mm-hmm, we will see those deaths again.
I agree. However, I also think of it from the standpoint with it Roe v. Wade overturned, each state now gets to choose how, by law, they enforce and they get to set their own laws. So again, we're talking about Mississippi. We're now here in Wisconsin. We have an abortion ban based on legislation that was written back in 1849. Nothing current, nothing to address all of the ills that are going on. So to also, with it no longer being a federal coverage, each state has its own autonomy. which is a concern in itself. So there will be, and there are mothers that are now not just the professionals, but they're going after the women who have been, who are impregnated, who are choosing to have an abortion.
And even the moving from state to state. There. If you look at some of the new information that's coming out, to your point, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, but with the state having the responsibility, there's concern that the patient will be punished or prosecuted, if they go to a different state and receive, say, the misoprostol, which is the pill to help have a medical abortion, if they take another dose. And they need that in their home state, say Mississippi, where it's not legal, but they had the initial visit in California, they can now be punished in their state. And exactly. So it's very messy. It's going to be very messy. I agree. It's going to affect so many more people now. The providers will be continue to be targeted, but the patient will be included, which is a new thing for this census decision.
But I also see this as a family matter as well, because if you have a couple, husband and wife or partners, and at that time the male and female decide that they cannot afford another child, or even health issues that are happening where she cannot carry that pregnancy to term, they are talking about, again, to look into the case and to possibly charge and indict people. So to me, you know, you're crossing the boundaries of my privacy. And that's a major concern for me.
We have a caller, 334-414,
334-414. Peace and blessings, Dr. James, and others who are on this call. I'm just tuning in, so I'll just be listening throughout the rest of the program. Thank you so very much for picking my call.
Thank you so much for dialing in with us and joining us in the conversation. Dr. Jackson, I'm going to go to you. You probably are the most recent new mom. You were bold and had a baby during the pandemic, and you had a baby in Texas. What kind of thoughts did you have, knowing the kind of legislation that existed in Texas and what your safety might be?
I was very concerned having, of course, a baby during the pandemic, but also just being in as a newcomer to this state. I didn't know the professionals here. I picked a OBGYN based on referral, like I'm sure most of us do. And in our own studies as professionals, we've seen that Black babies, as those Black women, do better with Black doctors. And so I try to, in my own life, choose Black obstetricians and Black pediatricians for my children. And unfortunately, you know, thankfully, everything went well. But unfortunately, my overall experience wasn't the most positive. We were safe, both of us. We did great. We're still doing great. But it really challenged me to be more emboldened to really support and take care, of course, of all patients, but in particular just really get stronger behind the backs of my Black patients, because we are really all they have a lot of times, and you can't treat it as business as usual, that it's just another patient. It has to be like, I know that they're not protected, I know that they have higher rates of death, I really need to keep an eye on her. And that is all thanks to my great teaching and mentorship from Dr. James, just teaching us that So I was able to have that watchful eye for myself, but I've been trying to really pick that up on the professional level because it's important. I mean, even things that may not be, I can't just say this is not my fight or this is not my specialty. I'll leave it to someone else because they're just not being looked after. And I did experience that and I don't like it. And I want us to be more intentional about how we support one another because nobody else is looking out.
Well, unfortunately, Dr. Jackson, as you were addressing, the healthcare system has not really studied what are best practices, meaning what is the best way to take care of women of color. And for those of us who have done so, we basically have learned as we've gone along. We want to make sure that we get the best outcomes, but unfortunately the teaching is not there. Even for the black physician to know how to best take care of us. And I think that that's the kind of thing that you observed in your own pregnancy. There were some scary times that may have been managed a little better had the type of teaching that was needed had been learned even by a black physician. And so I have found it very disappointing that we have not engaged in the proper education to take care of us, even though patients assume that that is the case. But our outcomes tell the story. And we come up with all kinds of excuses about why things didn't go well, and usually it is pointed at the patient rather than us accepting some responsibility for providing care that will result in a surviving mother and a surviving baby. And as the earlier recording showed, the goal is to get more white babies for adoption purposes. But even still, this country has done a poor job of providing obstetrical care for all women. Considering the resources that we have, there is no reason that makes sense for us to be at the bottom of the barrel as it relates to the safety of the care that all women receive during their pregnancies.
Absolutely, and we spend more money than any other developed country, and we're ranked by the success of our healthcare system by our infant mortality rates, which are ridiculous. And so it really is something that is across medicine. We haven't done well with obstetrical care. I agree with everything said.
I have a question for the doctors. And we're close to announcing of the sponsorship, but I do have this question to put on the table. And after Sister Asserta, shares sponsor with us. The question is, I see a two-sided coin. One side is abortion, but the other side for us is that prenatal care. So our women who choose to carry a pregnancy to term is getting, as you guys were just talking about, getting proper care. I would want to say best care, but at least proper care and be knowledgeable to advocate for self or someone to go with them to advocate with them. And I know we now have the midwife and the a doula. So if you guys could address that when we come back after Sister Thursday. Sister Sarta, are you there?
Mama Sarta, you have to want to tell us about being a sponsor?
Yes. Sponsors are welcome. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Send us an email at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. Support the program that is working for you by bringing to you information you will not hear elsewhere that you need to know. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to PayPal at sankofa_think@outlook.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Mother Sarta. Well, you asked a question and in this discussion, and it is one that our group, Sankofa Council, has talked about, and that has been rites of passage. And there have been a number of examples of that, and I think you, Sister Afu, are familiar with that from the standpoint of beginning the process of helping our youth understand what is pregnancy, what are the responsibilities that go along with this. This is something that I did in my own family, where my son very clearly understood, as he reminds me, he understood the process. And he is a soon-to-be father to a one-year-old. And I've observed him doing the kinds of things that are necessary to support the mother during a pregnancy, as in after the pregnancy, as the parent. And that is a learning process, and I'm sure it's a daily process. But we have to, as the elders, to be able to support our young adults in understanding that this is not all about fun and sex. This is a serious measure, even when it comes to the exercise of the decision to end a pregnancy. What do we need to do if we don't want to be pregnant? And you asked the question about contraception for men versus women. And my husband used to tell me that you spend your money on what's important to you. So if women want to see more contraceptive measures for men, we need to put some of our money behind that. Because the men certainly have put money into seeing that we had birth control. And not so much efforts in what their role needed to be. So I don't entirely buy into some of the science that says that this is not feasible. I think it's that people have chosen not to research it, but I didn't put my money into it. So we do have the ability to speak from the standpoint of investing in that which we feel is important and not expect that someone else does it. But we're going to have to get behind these types of measures, and we have yet to do that.
You know, part of this, if we go back and look, is
back in time and stuff, if you think about this and your point about who we need to, you know, look at and rally around and where are we putting our support, because even if you think about the Tuskegee incident, they talked about the men being infected with syphilis, but they never talked about the fact that those men were taking syphilis home every day. I unless somebody can help me, I never found anything that talked to about the wives, you know, the children, what happened with them. And I think go ahead.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. It never was really addressed. So if you didn't treat the men, which was part of the study, if you're not familiar that we had a method of treating syphilis and we withheld treatment. So that means that those infected men think that they were being treated, but they're going home. And someone, again, in terms of the research, what happened to the women who were exposed to syphilis and their babies?
I've tried to, I haven't found it. I've never been able to find anything that even speaks to it. But that is, you know, like I said, just thinking about those kinds of things. And there also, when Thatcher was over CDC, there was an incident in which they were doing research again. Because, again, research and what we tend to, as long as it's research, it's okay. But they were looking at measles and measles vaccine, and they were doing... I can't remember exactly where in Africa, but one site was in Africa and one site was in Texas, I think. But they, again, they were looking at the impact of that, and they were looking at pregnant women. So they looked at the impact of measles on pregnant women. And who ended up, apparently the person that ended up just couldn't take it anymore was the statistician they had hired. And he kept giving CDC, and that was with Thatcher there, these numbers are really bad. You know, the women are doing good. So he actually had to just go, and he finally just went and told some people to even stop it. Because they didn't stop it, even if he was saying there's a problem here. You know, we've got these babies dying, and we got these women having a problem with. Nothing was done until the white statistician said, I just can't do this anymore. And I don't, again, I looked around for that all the place. That kind of stuff doesn't hit the papers, obviously. But it's kind of scary.
Well, this is what, of course, makes that whole scenario so egregious, because it didn't take into consideration the impact on the partners. However, the women have somewhat of an advantage. In the event that they became pregnant, most are going to be tested for syphilis. And with it being diagnosed, being able to receive whatever the treatment that existed at that particular time. And how thorough they were about the diagnosis and screening of women at that time, I'm not clear, but this is why in our research we need to have, and what's required in your investigational review before a study is initiated in a hospital, for example, or a clinic, is that you should have members not only of the medical departments, but also of community to really raise some of these questions. Has a study been designed that has flaws in it that could in fact serve to be detrimental to the participants in the study? And I think it contributes to why people may be afraid of participating in these studies, not knowing what the process is, and really knowing whether the process was going to be safe. And frankly, for me, this always was a real dilemma for my being involved in the research where I am failing to give a treatment, one that we know is a treatment for the purpose of getting data. I've always found that very difficult to engage in. And so there's a lot that needs to be done in that area, but as you very well know, there are few of us who have that kind of research experience who are within the healthcare system to be able to raise these kinds of points. So I can see, Dr. McManus, how you say you can get in trouble because you're bringing up questions that folks don't want to have to deal with.
There you go.
But frankly, that is what's going to be required, to know the ramifications of some of the methods that you are considering in the design of your study. But getting back to what some of our solutions need to be, as we are presenting some of the problems, we have a right to, and we must exercise that right to insist that those individuals who have that expertise, who have that experience, must be involved in these types of decisions. And frankly, I don't see that happening. I don't see that has happened. That doesn't mean it's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But as we are talking about it here, we have got to move in that direction. We cannot have centers of higher learning such as we have in Milwaukee, the University of Wisconsin, Medical School, the Medical College of Wisconsin, Marquette University.
Right.
We can't really say that we have these top-notch educational scholarly institutions that are not engaged in the kinds of research that is critical in order for us to see that quality, truly quality care with excellent results, and they are possible, take place. And so those of us, be it the elders who make that kind of insistence, the Black Health Coalition, the National Medical Association, we must step forward in seeing that these considerations take place and that they are being addressed.
Agreed.
Sister Afua.
I'm here.
I know you have some thoughts as we are preparing to wrap up.
I so agree with everything that I heard you just say. And I think of Dr. McManus as she talked about always being in trouble. You know, the great blessing that we have with Dr. McManus is hers is always good trouble. She's one of them Congressman Lewis people. It's her trouble is always good trouble. She brings, as you stated, these questions of to make you think and to do a lot more research, step forward instead of backwards when she comes out. And when she comes out knowing and having receipts and information. So we're blessed to have her in our community. Dr. Jackson, I am very honored to have heard you participate and be a part of our discussion this evening. And knowing that you are under the tutelage of Dr. James, that says a lot right there, because I know what kind of woman she is. She's also one of good trouble.
So I would say to our community family that please, I hope what you've heard has touched your head, your heart, and has inspired you to seek out information as to, from a the political perspective, the criminology of the perspective, as well as the medical perspective of Roe v. Wade, the turnover, and how it will affect our people, our Black community. And we thank you for your participation. We also thank Dr. Rogers for the production staff and the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use these principles in our lives. We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy. Visit our sponsors at www.edocadvice.com and the Fundly Medical Clinic. Good night. Stay safe. The Sankofa family and our guests and all of you. Next time, your host, Ifua. I am Ifua Ma'at, Dr. James, and Mama Serta, Auntie. We say peace and blessings, and we thank our guests for all of their knowledge, their wisdom.
There's a whole lot of people in the house trying to smoke with a yak in your mouth. And we back outside. You said you outside, but you ain't that outside. Worldwide hoodie with the mask outside. In case you forgot how we act outside.
Justify love. We go round in circles, searching for love.